worldwide. Agent A, reporting live from Cape Canaveral. MK, big sight, let's rap. Back in time.
It's game week. We finally made it. It is week one of the 2025 college football season. The long, treacherous O word that I don't believe in, offseason, is officially over. We made it, and there are games being played this week. Everybody across the nation is playing this week. We had week zero last week, so we got a little appetizer to the main course. And I got to recap it. There are some storylines from week zero that I just got to shine a big, bright light on. I have some week one what-ifs that I need to address because a lot of chaos could happen after week one of the regular season. I'm going to do something bold. If you remember, I tiered the Big 12, and that was already really bold of me. And now I'm going to predict Big 12 win totals in a new segment that I'm going to do this week. I'm going to predict the win totals of each team in every power conference. And also, Bryce Underwood has been named the starting quarterback at Michigan. And I'm going to give a 2025 season preview of the Michigan Wolverines at the tail end of the show. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Please subscribe to the Game Nashville Sports Network podcast. Wherever you get your fine listening materials, it is there you'll find every episode of this very dear podcast. You'll also find all the other podcasts that we're doing here at 102.5 The Game. Please, please, please make sure you subscribe. It doesn't sign you up for anything. It just helps out the station. And also follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10 because I'm going to be posting lots of content as we're in the swing of things here. The season's getting going. Some have already said that we're in midseason form. I tend to agree with those people, whoever they might be. And we got college football to talk about. Let's dive into the show. Okay, so if you weren't aware, there were some CFB games that were played this weekend, in total five. Iowa State beat their longtime bitter rival Kansas State, not in Manhattan, not in Ames, but across the pond in Dublin, Ireland. This was a grudge match. It was ugly at times. There were four total turnovers in the first half, a muffed punt, but it was ultimately, the product was beautiful because there's something glorious about two Big 12 teams from what I believe to be the Midwest, if we're geographically speaking, bitter rivals, rainy, muddy field, just kind of slogging it out. It was such a beautiful display. And do we really know if the Europeans that were observing the game truly comprehended what they were watching? Because I'm not entirely sure, but I sure did, and I have some thoughts. On this show, we are going to address the winners first, so that means we address Iowa State since they won the game 24-21. When I previewed this game, I mentioned the Big 12 implications, that this legit had title game implications on it in terms of the Big 12 conference, and if you are to win the title in the Big 12, that means you earn a spot in the 12-team college football playoff. Iowa State gets a big-time win in week zero. I thought Rocco Becht was great. Now, if you were a box score watcher, you see that he completed 50% of his passes. Yes, that is true. But what the box score doesn't tell you are the conditions were not great for throwing the football. But yet, Rocco Becht still managed to throw for two touchdowns, and he also ran one in, and he came in clutch when his team needed him the most. That, to me, is an X-factor player. And not to mention, Rocco Becht has had 19 consecutive games with a passing touchdown, which is tied for the longest streak in FBS, the longest active streak in FBS. He was great. And to compliment him, his running back Carson Hansen, who had over 70 rush yards, he wasn't much of a factor in the first half, and to be honest, not a lot of people were. But Carson Hansen really came on the scene in the second half, helped Iowa State. I thought their tight ends were great. There was a play in the game in which they ran a four tight end set, which means they had four tight ends on the field at the same time during a single play. It was phenomenal. It was true Big 12 football right in front of us. I thought the defensive line played well, which was a question mark for them entering the season, especially the depth of the defensive line. I thought the defensive line played very solid in this game and holding Kansas State to 21 points. And the Matt Campbell 4th-and-3 call towards the end of the game, just beautiful. The play where Rocco Beck dumped it off in the flats to Carson Hansen. Originally on the field, they thought that Carson Hansen scored, but he was down at the 1 yard line. Thought it was a tremendous play call. And I thought Matt Campbell really showed his true colors. Now, Matt Campbell, the winningest active coach at Iowa State, he took a pay cut so his assistant coaches could get paid more and therefore the university could retain those assistant coaches. If you remember when Tennessee fired Jeremy Pruitt and they were looking for a head coach, you heard Matt Campbell's name floated around. You've heard Matt Campbell's name floated around NFL circles as well. He's drawn legitimate interest. And yet, he is still coaching the Iowa State Cyclones. That is loyalty. That is not caring about the money as much about, rather than he cares about taking care of the people around him. And I have a question. Isn't that what we all desire in today's current stage of college football, the current state of the sport? Because a lot of people complain about NIL. A lot of people complain about leaving to go to other schools and transferring in order to get more money. But then you hear stories about Matt Campbell, who took a pay cut so that his assistant coaches could get paid some more. That is a coach that truly cares about his team, that truly cares about the people that he works with, truly cares about the university, and he hasn't left. And he's gotten, again, he's gotten NFL interest. Matt Campbell is one of the most underappreciated coaches in the entire country. So I just had to give him a proper shout out. Now to address the loser in Kansas State. Kansas State, they lost their running back in this game, Dylan Edwards, who was a transfer from Colorado prior to last season. That was a big loss for them. That was a big loss because DJ Giddens, who was their primary running back last year, is now gone. So Dylan Edwards steps into the RB1 role. They lose him. He muffed a punt also earlier in the game. So that's a big loss for the offense and for the team in general. Avery Johnson, he had 3 touchdowns. But I think it's time that we have a tough conversation about Avery Johnson. I watched this entire game, and I've done my research. I've looked at stats. I've looked at reactions. I've listened to people give instant reactions. Avery Johnson, when I was watching this game, I didn't think to myself, despite him having better statistics than Rocco Becht, I didn't think Avery Johnson was an X factor for Kansas State. I didn't think he was a game changer. I thought when Kansas State needed a clutch play, yeah, Avery Johnson was good, but I didn't think he was great. So what does that mean for Avery Johnson this season? Is he going to live up for the expectations that media had for him? And I have to address something. I think the media was way too quick to crown Avery Johnson. There have been many comparisons to Johnny Manziel. There have been so many people ready to crown Avery Johnson as the king of the Big 12, and we just got to let him play. We just got to let him play. I think Avery Johnson's a really, really good quarterback, and I don't think this has anything to do with Avery Johnson. He may just only be a really good quarterback. I think it's more so the media's fault for crowning him way too early, and the media did the exact same thing with Nico Iamaleava last year at Tennessee. He had some great performances against Chattanooga and NC State and Kent State, and everybody was ready to crown him the Heisman Trophy winner of 2025, and then SEC play started, and what did we see? Nico Iamaleava was not great in SEC play. He was really good against the Group of Five teams. He was really good against Vanderbilt, but when the lights got bright, there were times where he was good, But he overall was not a great season for Nico Iamaleava. So I think the media needs to calm down on crowning people early and just let them play. And if they are great, if they're elite, that's awesome. And if they're really good, hey, that's okay too. Maybe they just weren't built up to be elite. But we got to stop crowning people way too early. So that's what I wanted to address. I thought Avery Johnson was fine. I thought he was good, but I didn't think he was a game changer. And that's okay. Some other week zero storylines that I wanted to address. UNLV, they played Idaho State, and they were a big favorite. This is Dan Mullen's debut. And also, I don't know if anybody else had the same issue, but I was trying to find the game, and I was scrolling through Twitter trying to find where I could watch this because it didn't list on ESPN where you view the scores. It didn't list the cable service or the channel that was providing this game. And I saw that Pete Dammel put out on Twitter that this game was on Prime Video. So I go to Prime Video, and luckily I make it midway through the first quarter, so I didn't miss much. This is Dan Mullen's debut. Very excited. Alex Orji, Anthony Calandria, both playing quarterback for UNLV. And they're big favorites against Idaho State. And let me tell you, this was tooth and nail. UNLV squeaked this one out by the skin of their teeth, and they barely beat Idaho State. They win 38-31, but it was not pretty. And I'm sure Dan Mullen wasn't pleased. Like, yeah, they got the win, but I'm sure he thought that they would win by more. But this was notable just because Dan Mullen, he's back in the head coaching game. He's back in college football. Alex Orji, transfer from Michigan, starting at quarterback. Anthony Calandria, the Virginia transfer, also in at quarterback. They rotated them every other series. You got some notable players that are playing for UNLV. Justin Flo, former five-star linebacker that was committed to Oregon, also played at Arizona. Jake Pope, who was a former safety at Georgia. There were four former Florida players that played for Dan Mullen during his time at Florida that are now on this UNLV team. So very notable. But UNLV barely squeaks out a win versus Idaho State. Kansas, they go up against Fresno State. The starting quarterback for Fresno State happens to be the son of a Pro Football Hall of Famer and Kurt Warner, EJ Warner. This first quarter was a shootout offensively. I believe it was 14-7 after the end of the first quarter. Kansas scores on their opening possession. Then Fresno State scores, and then Kansas scores again. So it's just fireworks early. And then from there, the offense just completely stops for Fresno. Kansas, on the other hand, despite only scoring 31, I thought the offense operated at a very high level, and that was because Jalen Daniels, their quarterback, was healthy. Jalen Daniels has struggled with his health. And I said, and I'm going to repeat again, that Kansas, if Jalen Daniels, their quarterback, is healthy, can easily win 9 games. I think they'll win 8, but I could see them winning 9. Here's the thing about Jalen Daniels. He's got to protect himself because he knows that he's been struggling with his health, with injuries, and he took a lot of big hits in this game. He needs to get down. He needs to slide. He needs to know when to not put on the Superman cape. He can. He is this team's Superman. He's not even just the offensive Superman. He's the team's Superman. They go as he goes. But he needs to protect himself. He took a lot of big hits, like I was saying. And also, I think other players need to develop around him so that Jalen Daniels doesn't feel the need to be Superman all the time. I thought Highshaw, their running back, really, really good performance in this game. But I'd like to see more other players really pop up around him to kind of take the load off of Jalen Daniels. But Jalen Daniels certainly is capable of turning into Superman when need be. It's just you want to keep him healthy so Kansas can be really good. And honestly, I really enjoyed watching their offense operate under first-year offensive coordinator Jim Zabrowski. I'm telling you, if Jalen Daniels is healthy, this Kansas team is going to be really, really good. Western Kentucky beat Sam Houston State. I don't know how many of you were tuned into this game. I personally was. I watched all 5 games and had a split screen going. Western Kentucky put on an offensive clinic. Their quarterback, Maverick McIver. What a name. What a name. I think I'm going to name my son that. Maverick McIver Kelly. Western Kentucky beats Sam Houston State 41-24 And I just wanted to give a shout out to the offense because the offense was really fun to watch over in Western Kentucky. Now, here was the nightcap. I was a little disappointed this game was not played at like 1 a.m. It was played at 6:30 local time, central time. Hawaii and Stanford. Now, I've complained about some of the bad things about college football that are going on behind the scenes, but when the season is here, I tune all that stuff out, and I'm just focused on the actual games, and I'm so happy that we have actual games to talk about. Hawaii wins a walk-off against Stanford, and I'm going to use my platform here, the guy talking in front of the microphone, to give a shout-out to Hawaii, two specific players for Hawaii, because for all the bad things in college football, there's 100 more good things, and we saw it on display in this Hawaii game. Micah Alahato, their quarterback, got rolled upon, got his foot slash ankle rolled up on, I believe it was in the late first quarter, early second, and he played the entire game limping, but he came up clutch when that team needed him the most, tough as nails. This game was awesome, awesome to watch. So I want to give a big shout out to Micah Alahato. He is from Bishop Gorman, very notable high school in the Las Vegas area, and short little quarterback, but man, the way he played, you would have thought he was 6'6". I mean, he was just playing his heart out, and I want to give a big shout out to him. And I'm worried I'm gonna butcher this name because it's a tough one to pronounce, and I'm not always the best with names, but by golly, I'm going to try. Okay. Their kicker, Hawaii's kicker, Matsuzawa, I think that's how you say it, but forgive me, give me a little bit of grace if I didn't pronounce that correctly. Kanzi Matsuzawa from Tokyo, Japan, learned how to kick a football from YouTube, ended up being good enough to go to a JUCO in Ohio, and then eventually found his way to Hawaii, kicked the game winner against Stanford, and Hawaii has never beaten Stanford in its program's history. Heck, they've never even beaten an ACC school in their team's history, and they snapped a 10-game losing streak to Power 4 opponents. And this guy learned to kick a ball from YouTube. Man, you can really do anything with YouTube. But I want to give a big shout-out to this guy because it just goes to show if you truly want something bad enough, you can make it happen. And their kicker certainly did that, and this was just such a fun game to watch. Certainly lived up to the billing, certainly lived up to the hype that I personally had for it. It was absolutely incredible. Week zero, huge success. And now we officially turn the page to week one. All right, coming up on the other side, I have some week one what ifs, some questions that will be answered. We'll get to that on the other side. You're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back into The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, The Game. I have some week one hypotheticals that I just want to toss out there just to get you as prepared as possible for the amazing Labor Day slate of games. Okay, so my first question has to do with the Auburn-Baylor game. Friday night, 7 p.m. Fox. Auburn travels to Waco to take on Baylor. I think this is going to be a great game. My question is, what if that Baylor defense has Jackson Arnold's head spinning during this game? Jackson Arnold, transfer quarterback from Oklahoma, now goes to Auburn to work with Hugh Freeze to try to fix some of the issues that were present last year. Baylor, a team that is coming off of an 8-4 record last year, they have a good quarterback of their own in Sawyer Robinson. They have a really good defense. Their head coach, Dave Aranda, is defensive-oriented, and he's really worked hard on making that defense a brick wall this year. Jackson Arnold struggled with some turnovers last year, but I don't think all of them were entirely his fault, or that's a whole separate segment in itself. But what if Baylor's defense has Jackson Arnold seeing ghosts out there? What if he throws a couple of interceptions? What if he has multiple turnovers? And dare I ask this question? what if Auburn loses week one at Baylor? Because I feel like if you're Auburn and you're wanting to make a statement this year, this is a game you have to win. Imagine the toxicity that would be coming out of Auburn, Alabama, that we'd be talking about nationally surrounding Hugh Freeze's job security. Can you imagine? I think Hugh Freeze is a coach that's on the hot seat this year if Auburn doesn't show massive signs of improvement. And if Jackson Arnold doesn't turn out to be the guy, for Hugh Freeze's sake, you better hope Jackson Arnold is the guy. So that is my first what if. We're moving on to Saturday, the big game that everyone's looking forward to, Texas at Ohio State. This is another quarterback. The media has already crowned Arch Manning. He has started two games for Texas. He's certainly very physically impressive. He has all the intangibles. I understand why people think he's going to be really, really, really good to elite. I understand, and I certainly believe that Arch Manning is going to be there, but the media, we just got to let him play. But I have a question. What if Arch Manning struggles versus Ohio State? His first road start as a college quarterback, his first game as the starter, like the full-time permanent starter at Texas. What if he struggles versus Ohio State? Because there is a world in which Texas loses three games before Halloween. If you look at their schedule, if they drop this one to Ohio State, they still have to play at Florida and then the Red River Shootout against Oklahoma. All three of those games happen before Halloween. So there is a legitimate world, and I'm not saying it's going to happen or it's even likely, but there is a world out there where Texas loses three games before Halloween. Imagine the freakout meter if Texas was, let's say, 2-3 going into week six of the regular season. And the same can be true about the other side. What if Julian Sain, his first home start, he's been named the starter for Ohio State. What if he struggles versus that Texas defense? Because there's a chance that we could see two quarterbacks versus Texas. I'm not ruling it out of the picture. Julian Sain, the guy he beat out Lincoln Kindholz. What if Julian Sain struggles against Texas? I don't know. What if Thomas Castellanos, the quarterback of Florida State, what if he backs up his words, and what if Florida State beats Alabama? You know, we're talking about the same team that went 2-10 last year, that Florida State. People have already been talking about Alabama, rightfully so. I mean, I predicted them to win the whole thing. I believe in Kalen DeBoer, but he's having to follow a legend in Nick Saban, and just because Alabama didn't make the 12-team playoff last year, people are losing their minds over there because they're used to winning because that's all Nick Saban did. What if Florida State beats Alabama in week one? More toxicity coming out of SEC country. Again, I'm not saying that these things are going to happen or they're likely. I'm just throwing a hypothetical out there. And what would we think of Florida State if that were to happen? Here's a good one. Did you know that LSU has not won a week one game since Joe Burrow and that team in 2019? LSU under Brian Kelly, 0-3 in week one games. What if LSU goes into the other Death Valley in Clemson and loses that game? Brian, do you hear the crickets? Do you hear the tense, you could cut it with a knife. Can you imagine if Brian Kelly and LSU, they lose week one to Clemson? We would be singing Clemson's praises. A lot of people are, myself included. But if LSU loses that game, can you imagine the conversation surrounding Brian Kelly and that LSU program? Because I feel like for LSU, this is a game they must win. They got to win it. Because this is a team that legit believes they're going to contend for a national championship. If you're going to contend for a national championship and you play that schedule, you got to win this Clemson game. Because you may be able to afford another loss. But if you go 9-3, highly doubt you're going to make the playoff. What if, moving on to Sunday, What if Kyren Drones, the quarterback at Virginia Tech, finds a way to put on the Superman cape and goes crazy versus South Carolina's defense? I've already said on the record that I believe South Carolina is going to miss the playoffs this year. That doesn't mean that I don't think they're a good team. I just have some question marks. And by the way, their running back, Rashul Faison, who was a transfer from Utah State, has been ruled eligible, so he will be available for the Gamecocks. That's a massive win because I had a lot of question marks surrounding Lenore Sellers on offense, and also that defense kind of got raided by the NFL draft. But what if Kyren Drones goes crazy for Virginia Tech and Virginia Tech beats South Carolina in week one? Just throwing these ideas out there, not saying that they're going to happen, just kind of throwing them out there, kicking these ideas around. Miami, they host Notre Dame Sunday night, 6:30, ABC. What if Carson Beck struggles against Notre Dame? You know, I've been defending Carson Beck this entire spring since he transferred to Miami because I believe Carson Beck is going to be a top 10 quarterback in college football this year. And people seem to forget that we were talking about him potentially being the number one overall pick a couple of years ago before last year. And people seem to forget that Georgia was dropping every ball thrown their way last year and they didn't have much of a run game and a lot of surrounding pieces were not up to Georgia standards. So a lot of the pressure was on Carson Beck to perform. Now he transfers to Miami, a very pass-heavy offense. I think he'll be able to have a little bit more success in this offense. But what if he struggles versus Notre Dame's defense? What's the conversation surrounding Miami this year? What's the conversation surrounding Notre Dame? What's the conversation surrounding Mario Cristobal and Carson Beck? You know, statistically, Miami has improved their win totals each year under Mario Cristobal's tenure. So it's not like he's done a poor job by any means. But what would the conversation be? And last what if for you. What if UNC gets blown out at home versus TCU? So I'm sure that you've seen that UNC has announced, I believe the series will be on HBO Max, that there will be kind of like a Hard Knocks feature for the North Carolina football team through this upcoming season. I'm actually very excited to watch. And TCU, I believe, is a legit sleeper for the Big 12. I believe they can surprise a lot of people. I believe they have one of the most underrated quarterbacks that nobody's talking about in Josh Hoover. I expect TCU to win this game, but it is at UNC. Nobody really knows what to expect from North Carolina this year or really at all under Bill Belichick. But what if TCU blows out North Carolina? What does it sound like coming out of Chapel Hill? What does the national media have to say about that? What would that look like? Can you just imagine if TCU were to go into Chapel Hill and win this game like 42-10? Could you imagine the conversation that we would be having surrounding Bill Belichick in North Carolina? Again, these are all what ifs. These are all hypotheticals. Just putting it out there, just kicking these ideas around. So those are my weekend what ifs, or week one what ifs, excuse me. I'd like to, again, be bold, and I would like to predict the Big 12 win totals. We'll do that on the other side. You're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, The Game. All right, you know me as being one that is really bold, especially when it comes to this show. I've tiered the Big 12 before. We know the Big 12 is the most unpredictable conference in college football, and yet here I am trying to predict the Big 12. I'm going to do it once again. I have Big 12 win totals just ready to go. And I'm going to be doing this for each of the Power Four teams. I'm going to do this for the ACC, the SEC, and the Big Ten. Okay, so first for the Big 12, we're going to start in alphabetical order. So just going in that order. Arizona State, I have at 10-2 because I have this team winning my Big 12. I have them or winning the Big 12 in my bracket. I have them playing Texas Tech and defeating them and getting to the 12-team college football playoff once again. So I don't believe that we're going to have an 11-1 team in the Big 12 just because of how competitive it is. So I have Arizona State going 10-2. but they will be right back in the 12-team college football playoff. Arizona's not going to be a good team this year. They have their quarterback back in Noah Fifita, but I just don't trust these surrounding pieces. They lost some players to the portal. They lost some players to the NFL draft. Most notably, Noah Fifita's biggest target in Tet McMillan. I have Arizona going 4-8. I believe that's what they went last year. Yeah, they did go 4-8 last year. BYU, this was a team that had 11 wins last year. They won the Alamo Bowl versus Colorado, went 10-2 in the regular season, and then the bowl game gives them 11 wins. But their quarterback He violated the school's honor code, was going to be suspended, then he decided to leave, and now he's at Tulane. But outside of the quarterback situation, I still have question marks for BYU, and I have BYU going 6-6. Now, 6-6 would be good enough for them to go to a bowl game, but they have a new starting quarterback, Barrett Bachmeier, who's a transfer from Stanford. Defense was really good for them last year. I just don't know about the surrounding pieces, so I have BYU going 6-6. Baylor, the Baylor Bears, I have them going 8-4, which is what they went last year. Now, I could look like a fool and be totally wrong, because I believe Baylor and TCU both are sleepers for the Big 12 championship. I think they're both contenders, and I could easily see Baylor going better than this and winning the Big 12. And I'll tell you what, that week one game versus Auburn is going to tell me most of what I need to know about how Baylor's 2025 season will go. So we'll have to see. I'm going to predict that game later on this week, so stay tuned for that. Cincinnati. I really like Cincinnati's quarterback, Brennan Sorsby. A lot of people aren't talking about him. Heck, probably most of you don't even know who that is. I think he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the entire Big 12 conference, and I think Cincinnati will be a decent team this year. And when I say decent, I have them going 6-6. Good enough to get to a bowl game. And I think we're going to find out a lot about Brennan Sorsby, who's pretty popular in the NFL draft community. So we'll see. Colorado, I believe their over-under win total is 6.5. Last time I checked, I'm taking the under. I have Colorado going 6-6. Colorado has a pretty decent schedule for a Big 12 team. Of course, they open with Georgia Tech. That game is at home. I'm not going to reveal my pick because that's for later on. But they also play at TCU at home versus Iowa State. They're at Utah. They play Arizona State at home. And then they end the season at Kansas State. I don't think they are going to be as good as they were last year. They don't have Shedeur Sanders. They don't have Travis Hunter, obviously. They have Caden Salter and Juju Lewis. I believe Caden Salter is going to be the starter. Still have questions about that offensive line. Still have questions about the defense entirely. They lost one of their best corners, not named Travis Hunter. They lost Colton Hood to Tennessee. I have Colorado going 6-6, which would still get them to a bowl game. Houston. What are people saying about Houston this year? Did you know their head coach is Willie Fritz, the former Tulane head coach? He's now at Houston. I think Houston will be sneaky good this year, and I have them going 7-5. Does anybody know who their quarterback is? Any guesses? Anyone? Connor Wegman, does that name ring a bell? The former Texas A&M quarterback, the guy that started the season before Marcel Reed came in? Yeah. That's him. He's the starting quarterback at Houston. I think Willie Fritz is a really good head coach. I have Houston going 7-5. Iowa State. Clearly, they got a much-needed win over Kansas State. They already have a conference win, and it's not even week one yet. I have Iowa State going 10-2, which is exactly what they went last year, which puts them right back in the mix for a Big 12 championship appearance. And let me tell you what, I was looking at their schedule. That Arizona State game on November 1st, they get Arizona State at home. That is going to be a game that you want to watch, I can promise. They also have Kansas on November 22nd, which I also think can be a sneaky good game. But I have Iowa State going 10-2. Kansas, I already gave this one away, but I have them at 8-4. But I could easily see this team going 9-3. They do close the season at Arizona, at Iowa State, and at home versus Utah. I think they could potentially the Missouri game on September 6th at Missouri. That is going to be a I'm happy they're bringing this rivalry back, first of all. I hope it becomes an annual thing now that the SEC is mandated that you play a Power Four conference opponent that is not in the SEC in the non-conference. I hope they keep this game, but that Missouri game, I really think they have a good chance of winning that one on the road. Not predicting anything yet, but just saying for the record, I have Kansas at 8-4, but could easily see them going 9-3 depending on the health of Jalen Daniels. I don't need to spend too much time on this one. Oklahoma State's not going to be good. They're just not. 3-9. It's what they went last year. I don't believe in Oklahoma State. They also play at Oregon week two. So I think that's an interesting helmet matchup because I don't remember how many times we've seen this game played. Just throwing that out there. TCU. I have TCU 8-4. Same exact record as I have Baylor. I think that's what they went last year in the regular season as well. Could easily see them being better. Josh Hoover, one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the Big 12. One of the most underrated quarterbacks in college football. How about that? So I have TCU going 8-4, but could easily see them in contention for a Big 12 title because, after all, it is the Big 12, and it is so unpredictable. They do play SMU in week three, which I'm very excited about. They get them at home. If they win that game, that sets them up pretty nicely because they're at Arizona State the following week. They also have to play at Kansas State. They get Baylor at home. They get Iowa State at home. So we'll see. I could see them going 9-3, but we'll have to find out. Texas Tech. Some say that I'm a little biased towards Texas Tech because I'm very high on them. They are kind of a trial run to see if you can buy a roster and win right away. Let me tell you which game you need to circle on the calendar. That is October 18th when Texas Tech goes to Arizona State. I believe that will be a preview of the Big 12 title game if you listen to my prediction show. They also have to play on the road at Utah. They're at Kansas State. So not an easy Big 12 schedule, but I see them prevailing. I see them only dropping two games, and that could be to Arizona State. That could be to Utah, both of which are on the road. But I think they went out, and I have Texas Tech going 10-2, and they're right there in the Big 12 title game. First time in school history. Don't need to spend too much time on this one either. UCF, 3-9. UCF's not going to be really good. They're not going to be good at all. I think they'll finish last in the Big 12. It'll be a race for last between them and Oklahoma State. West Virginia, I believe in Rich Rodriguez. I do. I believe in the future of West Virginia. I do not believe in 2025. I have West Virginia going 4-8. When you bring in 70 new players from either high school or the transfer portal, there's an influx of newness in Morgantown. I don't believe in it this year, but I believe in the future. I believe Rich Rodriguez will get that program turned around, and we'll see West Virginia bounce back in a big way. Lastly, I want to finish with Utah. I have the Utes going 9-3. I believe in their quarterback, Devin Dampier. I believe in their offensive coordinator, Beck, who was brought over from New Mexico along with Dampier. I believe that that pairing is going to work out just fine. Kyle Whittingham does not lose a lot, and that's just the truth. That's a fact. I have Utah bouncing back and going 9-3. That defense is going to be good. That offensive line is going to be good. Utah is going to be nasty in the trenches. I have Utah going 9-3, and they're also in the mix for a Big 12 title as well. So those are my Big 12 record predictions, which I will also be posting to the socials, so it's very important that you follow me there. One more segment to come here on the Air Raid. Big news out of Ann Arbor as Michigan named Bryce Underwood, true freshman Bryce Underwood, their starting quarterback. I want to give a quick preview for the Wolverines in 2025. You're not going to want to miss it. Coming up on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly, this is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment here on the air, Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Wanted to give a quick preview of the Michigan Wolverines because we've been doing this bit where we preview one team leading up until week one of the college football season, and this could very well continue based on how much you, the audience, like this segment. This could very well continue into the 2025 season. But I wanted to talk about the Michigan Wolverines because, frankly, they were they weren't bad last year. They were 8-5. Defense was good per usual. Offensive line was good. Run game was good. But they had the forward pass turned off. Well, now they just named freshman Bryce Underwood their starting quarterback. He was the number one overall prospect in the 2025 class. High expectations for Bryce Underwood. He certainly has high expectations for himself. If Michigan is able to be good to really good in the passing game, watch out for Michigan. I believe they can be knocking on the door of a potential college football playoff berth. They certainly have some key returners on the defensive side, despite losing Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham, who were both first-round draft picks. They have some linebackers returning in Ernest Hausman and Jayshon Barham. They have some defensive linemen returning that are going to be big time. TJ Guy, Derek Moore, Rayshon Benny. Those are certainly three names to watch. And some secondary members that are going to be key. Safety Rod Moore, corner Zeke Berry. So certainly some defensive pieces, key defensive pieces that are returning to this year's team. Offensive line, their center returns. One of their guards returns. They have one of their tight ends who was behind Colson Loveland. He's returning. They went out to the transfer portal, and they got Alabama running back Justice Haynes, who's going to be huge in the run game. They got some wide receivers to help out Bryce Underwood and Anthony Simpson from UMass and Donovan McCauley from Indiana. Michigan has not had a really good receiver since, it seems like, Roman Wilson 2 years ago from their national championship team. So they certainly need some help in that category as well. They also went out and they got some defensive linemen to add depth. Defensive lineman Trey Williams from Clemson, Damon Payne from Alabama. They also got a safety TJ Metcalf from Arkansas. So they're loading up defensively. And again, I have no doubt that they'll be able to run the ball well with Justice Haynes. But how will the pass game look? Because if that pass game works, and it works out well with Bryce Underwood, then again, Michigan will be much better than people think, and they will certainly be in the mix for a college football playoff appearance. And if they're in the mix for a college football playoff appearance, then they're in contention for a Big Ten title. As it stands right now, Michigan is ranked 14th in the AP poll. Let's take a look at their schedule. So, the game everyone's talking about, at least right now, the game week two at Oklahoma, Sherrone Moore's alma mater, that's going to be a hinge point game for Michigan. If they come out of that game with a loss, I don't know what that does to that team's morale, but if they come out of that game with a win, then watch out. They're also at Nebraska during week four, and that's one of the games that Sherrone Moore is suspended for. And I believe Nebraska is also a sneaky, good, dark horse team for the college football playoff as well. So those are two, and not to mention both of those games are on the road. So that's two tough games in your first four games of the regular season. They are at USC on October 11th. That is game number 6 for them. They do have a bye week, but it's after the Nebraska game and right before they play Wisconsin at home, and then they have to go at USC. Then they get Washington at home the next week. And Washington, I think, can be a really good team with their quarterback, Damon Williams. They're at Michigan State the following week. And then I think they have a string of cupcakes with Purdue, at Northwestern, at Maryland. And then, of course, they end the year with that team up north. I could see a world in which Michigan goes 9-3. I could see an 8-4. I could see a 7-5. I could see a 10-2. But here's the thing. I just believe in the philosophy of Michigan. You know, be good in the trenches, run the ball, play good defense. And if you have a quarterback like Bryce Underwood with his kind of expectations, I believe the sky's the limit for this Michigan team, especially in the future. In the future of that program, I believe Sharon Moore hasn't changed much in terms of philosophy from what Jim Harbaugh kind of implanted in that structure. So that's obviously a key thing for Michigan, considering they won a national championship under Jim Harbaugh. Some want to debate if that national championship was invalid or not. I personally do not care to entertain those kind of thoughts. But yeah, I think Michigan will be knocking on the door of a college football playoff. I will not reveal my win total for them. I will save that for later on when I do Big Ten win total predictions. But yeah, that is a Michigan 2025 season preview. Really appreciate everyone that's listened to the air raid so far. We're just going to keep cranking this thing up as the regular season gets going here. The goal is 3 episodes a week, and I'm going to try my very best to give you 3 quality episodes every single week. And please make sure you're following me on the socials as well at Parker_Kelly10 for more content that I will be putting out there. And please make sure you're subscribed to the Game Nashville Sports Network podcast, wherever you get your fine listening materials. I'll have another episode here for you shortly, shooting for Wednesday. So make sure to be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, take care and God bless. I'll talk to you soon.